That's why I'm all in bed. Nobody gives me sympathy.
Hello, and welcome back to our podcast with a fanfic of a fanfic that itself is a synthesis of Fallout, the popular game about a post-apocalyptic wasteland, and My Little Pony, a popular show about pastel horses. Just gotta go slower this time.
You call attention to it, thus destroying the entire illusion.
Hyper-authentic.
And I am Sir Weirdington Esquire.
Yes. A very nervous pastel horse in a very, very austere talking jukebox. That's our story, and we're sticking with it. Hello again, folks. Welcome back to our podcast. We made it. Episode 13, Chapter 19. Welcome back.
So, this is a point where I think it's recap time.
It's recap time.
What even did happen last time? All I remember is, like, simultaneous interest and disappointment in the true story of Immorton Pone, of Deus, the antagonist of the previous book. Let's see. So they were walking nervously away from the town, the like Hedonismville.
Yeah, the town of Flank, the town of Butt.
Amazing. Okay, so we're walking out of Buttsville. A bunch of nothing. Oh wait, okay, so we come across a memory orb, I think. Yeah, and that's where, like, and discover that among her many other chemical depiction, among her many other chemical dependencies, Blackjack has also acquired through overexposure a memory addiction. Just can no longer refuse the siren song of these fucking exposition orbs.
Yeah, she has an exposition addiction.
And that's where we find out about the wasted, like, potential of the core character idea of Deus, whose thing is that he's got a lot of, like, super deifically powerful cybernetics, but they all hurt constantly.
Yes.
Pumped up with, like, not enough painkiller.
Mm-hmm.
Which should make for, like, Bane?
Yes.
Or, like, but instead he's just shouty, because apparently Somber has no idea what pain management is like.
No, probably not really.
Well, then again, like, Somber is pretty well demonstrated that he's doesn't really seem capable of, like, understanding any other person's internal world. So, of course, he would have trouble mapping an experience like that.
Oh, for sure.
And then, literally out of the blue, apropos of nothing, Blackjack is struck by lightning as a form of scene transition. And wakes up yet again with amnesia. Like, wakes up in a haunted house, wherein basically a lot of nothing happens. We have some, like, her pit buck, the antlers have broken off, so it's not receiving any signal, and it's deactivated, so, like, her, ability is no longer available to her, but she still goes ham on some zombies with a cleaver she found in the kitchen. Eventually, we find out that there's a, what do you call it, character what do you call a character execution for... Is that what it's called? Character...
Character assassination, perhaps?
Yeah. Please edit me sounding dumb out of the... We can't have that.
Oh, no, that's not
it's
fair.
It's not in my brand.
If we...
It's not in my brand five.
If we edit out all my dumb,
it would completely devastate the formula of the podcast for me, of all the entities, to sound foolish. It's just, it would just disrupt our listeners' world. Like, I'm concerned for them.
Well, too bad.
So, anyway, what do you call character assassination for an entire setting? because in the previous story, the story of which this is a fanfic is had it that the Pony Aristocrats weren't given a fallout shelter. They were encouraged to please die.
Yeah.
In the apocalyptic fallout that their money and actions led to. But no, they had one.
It was tucked away.
But it wasn't in this particular mansion. And people tried to flee to it. And oh no. Oh, it was just so unfortunate. The good-hearted, rightful nobility living in this mansion were forced, I tell you, forced, had no choice except to kill each and every last refugee.
Well, for you see, they broke into private property, you understand. They clearly violated the Non-Aggression Pact.
Yeah.
They had to be shot on sight. It's the only way it could be done. They forced their hands. Sorry, hoofs. They forced their hoofs.
And also, literally, like, was there an infantry in this pony army?
Yeah.
Or was, like... Was McIntosh a sergeant or a general? Because
he was a sergeant.
Because we've so far
he's a sergeant
we have
Rock.
So far run a,
like
so far we have run across not a single story of any soldier in that war who was not a direct subordinate to Big McIntosh.
Yeah, no. McIntosh was just a sergeant, but he was like a really cool war hero. Like I said,
with tens of thousands in his individual unit, apparently.
Yeah, clearly. No, it's much dumber than that. It was like 8, but they're all incredibly important to the lore.
And that's about it. What did we gain from last chapter? What's the perk?
We gained the perk Ghoul Friend because Blackjack was talking to a lot of corpses in this chapter. She now gets additional speech options while talking to ghouls, and also 10% more damage.
10% more damage! There it is! Alright. The world makes more sense again. Because I was about to say, this violates my overall hypothesis that, like... Actually, I'm deeply confused! You see, my hypothesis that I brought up last episode, I think... was that, like, this is the world in which friendship forgotten. So, like, even the concept of, like, relating to another person is gone. Is just not a conceivable thought. And here we come with, like, you gain ghoul friend. You know, like, it's of course, a pun for girlfriend, but it also brings to mind elf friend.
Yeah.
From Lord of the Rings. And, like, did she... I don't remember. Did she talk any of the ghouls down?
Yeah,
like,
there was,
I don't remember any ghouls that survived.
There was one. Like there was a singular nice ghoul. She was like a nurse that was like with a bunch of like ghoul children and regular human children, horse children. And she was the one sole nice one that hadn't gone mad yet in the mansion. And that's, I'm assuming, where the perk comes from. It's also jarring that apparently talking to that ghoul gave her the power to kill ghouls better.
For you see, you must understand the enemy to truly destroy them.
Story sucks. Like, perks are so dumb. I say this every week, but they're so dumb. They don't work in a regular story. They make sense in a video game, because you need rewards for leveling, but, like, they suck in a story. Is the noise I'm making over this rebellion.
All right, the name for this week's chapter.
All right, so we're finally getting plot to happen for once in the goddamn story. So
yay.
Chapter 19, EC-1101, which if folks playing at home, that was the name of the Maltese.exe, the dumb magic MacGuffin technology that they've been trying to search for answers for this whole time, is finally getting revealed to what it does in this chapter. So get excited for this one. It's going to be a long one. Strap in, folks. clearing throat noises. The chapter opens with BJ just kind of bumming around chapel for a while, chatting with priests, having dumb conversations with people. It's not terribly engaging. We get some more backfill information about priest and Rampage's situation. It's something I like. It's in an earlier part, but fuck it, it's coming up now. Rampage used to be part of the Crusaders, and she also used to be in a romantic relationship with Priest, and then something happened. It's revealed now that what happened is that she killed a child. Even she doesn't remember why it happened. It just happened, and she's been, like, exiled from the Crusaders ever since, and which led her to joining the Reapers and after a bunch of complicated bullshit. And Priest isn't necessarily, like, malicious about it, but he's also just, like, he refuses to let her anywhere near children again. So that's a whole thing. Also, Priest, for clearing out the manor so that the Crusaders can scavenge the manor for supplies, Priest awards BJ with a new house. So BJ now has an actual, like, place to live in the Wastelands called Star House. Yay! Yeah, that's weird.
So, like, Priest has a bunch of empty properties? Or, like...
Well, just the one. What? It was the house he used to live in with Rampage until, like, the accident happened. And so he just, like, packed up all his memories into a literal box and then just, like, moved into chapel proper.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, so...
One last detail before we go into the house proper, though, is BJ, in kind of an emotional moment, decides to smooch Priest because, like, everyone's hot for Priest, as it turns out, which he doesn't reciprocate at all. And it's just kind of weird and awkward and just, like, I don't know, BJ read the mood, I suppose.
Yeah, weird thing to... Okay.
Yeah, I don't know why it's in the story either. Anyways, BJ then decides to tour the Star House and without Priest. It's filled with a bunch of dumb knickknacks because this house has apparently is a pre-war house that has had shit in it that people have never touched up to this point. It's filled with a bunch of, like, space memorabilia, like specifically, like, think like NASA is what I mean. Like, there's a bunch of old newspapers detailing the, like, the moon landing and the, like, astronauts, and then a big scandal happened with pregnancy, which forced one of the members to, like, step down. And again, this is one of the situations where I'm really only talking about this because it's critical to the shark jump of the story. And the only other real detail of the house that's important is you also find a bunch of old photos of family that were in Star House, that owned it initially, including a young foal named Taro, who is somehow connected to the grandfather that they buried in a grave all the way in, like, chapter 2 or whatever. So, like, I guess, like, you know, that I guess that finally comes to head of that character being related at all. She decides to take another memory orb. Yay! There's a lot of memory orbs in this chapter.
Just another hit. I gotta...
Well, they're on the all over the floor anyways. You might as well.
What? One falls from the rafters. Like, all right, Blackjack, that was real awkward where you, like, put your face against mine. But anyway, I cleared everything out. Pretty sure I did it. Whoops.
I'm pretty sure I swept up all the memory orbs, so I guess I missed one. Oh, Christ. So, this memory orb is dumb, and I hate it. It's dumb revisionism. So it's a Ministry of Morale, and it's important to remember that Ministry of Morale is the ministry run by Pinkie Pie. It's the black bag interrogation arm of the new government. But at this point, it wasn't, as it turns out, or this is a thing that was invented almost whole cloth by Somber. Originally, it was just literally a party town station ministry. And we're greeted with a much older-looking version of Pinkie Pie who has, like... It always makes care to mention that she's now has gray in her hair, and it looks like a candy stripe sort of pattern of, like, alternating gray and pink.
Okay.
That's not important. I always think it's a neat idea.
It is cute.
Yeah. It's a neat way of making her look old. Like, it's like, oh, yeah, I could totally see Pinkie Pie being like, yeah, I'm going to stripe my hair, because fuck you. But yeah, the Macintosh's Marauders are there, being pals, making small talk. This is all through the body of Vanity, a character who died in a previous story. He was a noble who joined the military. This is only really important because Goldenblood shows fucking up in the story again. He's looking incredibly decrepit and dying, seemingly recovering from some kind of hospital visit. He no longer looks like the like Ubermensch stallion he once did. Goldenblood weirdly like loyalty tests his own uncle, who's the body that Blackjack is inhabiting, by saying like, he's like, well, I joined the military. It only seemed right. He's like, yeah, but are you joining the military because you believe in the princesses and you believe in justice, or are you just doing this to appease the aristocrats? And he just kind of sputters because, like, of course he does, because Goldenblood is the libertarian Ubermensch. And even as a decrepit corpse, he's still able to, like, rock the minds of the people around him. He then has a big rant about, like, aristocrats and their money. And this is, I was talking about this just a second ago, pre-podcast, but, like, it's one of those things about, like, libertarian, like doublethink that I think is fascinating, where, like, they hate the idea of, like, the government having money, but they don't see the, like, hypocrisy of, like, then companies having that money. Because, like, well, oh, yeah, the government's just a bunch of wealth hoarders. These billionaires that just sit on money. No. They're innovators. They're job creators. And it's like, really, dude? Is that really you're going to be your stance here? But Pinkie Pie then interrupts this little screed talking about parties. One of the Mashkintosh Marauders, who's apparently been smoking weed this entire time, well, it's not weed, but it's basically weed, offers it to Pinkie Pie. Pinkie Pie has a real bad trip over it. And this is an important note for those playing at home. In the show, Pinkie Pie has, like, sort of, like, preternatural, like, prediction powers. Like, she can, like, she gets a weird feeling and it usually predicts things from happening. In FOE, this is exacerbated into her taking drugs to, like, heighten her, like, prediction powers to have, like, actual ability to see in the future, which is what leads into her becoming, like, the black bag, like, interrogation memory stealing organization of the arm of the ministries, because she becomes increasingly paranoid because she's literally predicting, like, attacks and stuff happening before they're supposed to. She has a rant where she calls out all the people in the room that are going to do bad things. Then she has a massive psychic freakout and predicts the bombs being dropped. That's what spurs... apparently this is the scene that spurs her to, like, create the ministries in the first place. Or restructure her ministry, sorry, into being the scary men in bags kind of thing. And, of course, this was also caused by Goldenblood, like, pivoting her paranoia too, because of course, like, Goldenblood had to be the one that came up with this idea in the first place, because this is just pure revision at this point. You might as well just have your, like, main villain character, like, be the cause of all of it.
Well, the villain Sue steps in
and he goes, what if you did the evil thing? And everyone went, oh, that sounds like a great idea, Goldenblood. We will do the evil thing. But I hate this. I hate moments like these in fan fictions of fan, like, okay, so fan fictions of fan fictions, but I hate this in fan fictions where a character is the, like, when a character, like, steps out of the shadows and reveals themselves to be the true cause of a thing happening. The story is always kind of, like, hokey and weird. And especially because this isn't going to be the first time, like, this is the first time this happens, but it's not the last time. This is going to be basically every single ministry is secretly, like, Goldenblood, like, mind parasited everyone into wanting to create their ministries by, like, carefully being at the right place at the right time to give them the idea in the first place. Because again, we're ramping up to the idea that this is all a sole villain, a singular bad actor's fault, and not, like, just a bunch of stupid bad decisions. But then that sort of the memory orb turns off, just as BJ can hear, like, movement coming from the one of the other rooms in the Star House. Christ. She bumps into a gigantic winged unicorn who looks eerily similar to the princesses of the old era. She dresses in a goofy, ridiculous Gothic Lolita style, talks in the royal we, is soft and large at the same time. She's basically the best character in the whole fucking story. That's probably going to be proven wrong later, but, like, she's... Okay, I'm going to have to back up and explain Alicorns in a second, but I just want to, like, revel in, like... As goofy as this setting is, there's something that, like, speaks to me on such a core primal level of, like, giant, soft-spoken, like, girl in gothic Lolita with a minigun. Like, I don't know, like, this...
I was not anticipating the minigun as a component of this description. That threw me off a little bit, I have to say. I have to confess. With a minigun.
Yeah. Well, okay. I mean, like, I'm so weak to, like, large and soft-spoken, but with big gun. Like, I'm...
I mean, it's an understandable weakness. I think it's a fairly common one. I wouldn't say it's too far off from, like, oh, you say you're afraid of spiders and or clowns. What an unusual mental weakness you have there. All right. So this character walks in daring a. Are we out of the hallucination?
Yeah, we're out of the memory orb. This is the real space now.
Okay, so in the actual, within the context of the actual story, a magical giantess, yes, with both magic horn and wings, enters the scene, speaking in the royal we, and toting a minigun on her side.
Yes, dressed like a tiny right. anime.
So what does she have to say?
You look like you want something to say, do you? Anyway, she has some sort of a weird sort of rambling conversation with BJ, where she's confused by BJ's kind of existence and presence in the building. She mentions that she's part of something called Unity. She is looking for something that's in the area or might be in the area, but it has having difficulty. So, like, to back up, to roll this back, like, 2 seconds. So now I get to talk about Alicorns. So Alicorns are a thing in this story. Alicorn is a fan-generated term for a character who has both a horn and wings and is usually large. Describes the princesses from the show, and I think the actual official term is just literally like winged, like unicorn. But regardless, in this story, Alicorns are these large, terrifying women who are all connected to some sort of bizarre hive mind and refer to themselves as the goddess, and that they're like poised to save the wastes in some way, but they're also looking for something, and no one knows what it is. They're a big feature in the original FOE story, but this one specifically is a little bit more autonomous because of the specific, like, makeup of this particular area in the waste. Like Gustavsburg has some sort of effect on, like, it damages the psychic aura that's required for them to, like, maintain their hive mind. So she's slightly more autonomous. She refers to herself as Lacuna, which I had to look up that name because I wasn't sure how to pronounce it. And she offers to join BJ's little ragtag crew out of a, like, deal that, like, oh yeah, if you help me, I'll help you. So I'll help you on your quest if you, like, get me what I'm looking for. But yeah, and then BJ decides to agree because BJ's like that about characters. But yay, best character joins the party. This is my favorite character in the whole story, and I can't wait to be disappointed. I don't know. Just let me have this, please, please, Somber.
No, no, I'm gonna let you have it as long as Somber does. I'm just wondering what the fall will be.
Yeah, like, what is the other shoe?
Actually, Horse Hitler, like, had some interesting ideas.
Yeah.
Say what you want about Horse Hitler, but he made the trains run on time.
Jesus. Oh man. But yeah, that's the sum of her story with this. Afterwards, BJ decides to confront Rampage over the whole, like, child murder thing. Rampage just is like, I literally don't remember it, but I probably did it, knowing me.
I mean, I'm called Rampage. Like, I don't know what you people were expecting. Like, I don't know. I don't understand where your expectations are.
Yeah. My name is literally to kill a lot of people all at once.
With an implicit, like, wildness and abandon, you know, like a lack of discretion for targets. So, really, this is on you.
Yes. They discuss the risk of Alicorn's rampage, kind of like his, like, yeah, it's... Alicorns are one of the most feared and hated things in the Wastes because they're all really dangerous. So, like, but hey, if you're going to work with one, fuck it. Like, because basically, like, BJ's like, well, I trust you. And she's like, oh, that's a stupid idea, too. But here we are.
I killed children. Like, he just heard that. Like, if you, like, all day today has been nothing but, like, oh, no, it's a fucking child murdering monster. Like, get it away. Why did you bring it to town? Like, I think that might have, you know, been a change in your overall opinion of me, but you know what? Like, you do you. Like,
you want to trust me, and hey, it's your funeral. Probably literally. Anyways, we go to have a little store chat. Bleh. Store trip with the obnoxious capitalistic brat that is Charity again. She swindles them out of a bunch more caps than they should. Glory gets some goofy, tough new leather armor. BJ gets some proper cop armor, cementing herself as, like, highly overly militarized cop pony. Like, it's one of those things where it's like, it's this would be a bad red flag if it wasn't already obvious that, like, Sombra doesn't see anything wrong with, like, the high cop imagery of the character in the first place. So, like, who cares? She's a cop. Like, clear that's supposed to be a good thing in this story.
A cop with unlimited jurisdiction.
Yeah, unlimited Dirty Harry. But yeah, then we go out to BJ overhearing Gloria Sakashi.
Habeas corpus, what are you, a bitch?
Sorry?
I said habeas corpus, what are you, a bitch?
Oh, that's awful. Thanks, I hate it. But we cut to BJ overhearing Gloria and Sakashi having a conversation. Well, it's more like a therapy session. Or Sakashi is giving her some, like, advice through the power of a story about her, like, feelings of uselessness and how, like, oh, well, you know, you bring important specific things to the team, and, like, you shouldn't feel useless just because you don't know your way around a gun. Glory takes a second to slut shame Caprice because we have to be reminded that, in fact, Sombor is a dude and all of his characters are thinly veiled rant pieces on his behalf. BJ then kind of steps into the scene and is like, oh, I heard everything. Let's have a conversation about this. Kind of cliches. BJ and Glory have a chat for a while where Glory, like, talks about her uselessness, which is sort of a funny moment because, like, at least to the audience, because we know Glory's useless because Sombra can't help but make her useless. So her saying, I'm useless, and then BJ going, ah, no, you've got plenty of positive qualities. Like, remember that time you did the thing, you know, with the stuff?
We all think your accent is hilarious. So that's a positive morale, like your the hilarity of your accent, like, kind of does a little bit to counteract, like, the sheer annoyance of P21's opinionated bloviating. There's that.
You got that going for you.
It's always hilarious to, like, see how you've, like, managed to completely fuck it up anytime, like, things get dangerous. Like, you know, it's a fun sort of, like, bingo. Like, it's a fun betting pool for, like, when you'll, like, turn out to have not been dead after all.
Yeah. I mean, you ended up in an oven somehow last week, so I don't even know, like, what you contribute. But yeah, BJ talks up her finer points. Glory has a bit of an emotional moment, and then suddenly confesses to BJ and kind of does a quick kiss on her. BJ kind of sputters out of the moment and kind of just goes, like, well, like, I don't necessarily think of you that way, and I think we should just be friends. Very specifically because I am a horrible disaster who's incapable of having, like, she doesn't phrase it this way because she just goes, like, oh yeah, all relationships I've ever had have just been sex, which is, like, basically just her red, like, admitting that she's just a giant red flag and has no real way to, like, maintain, like, commitment or personal attachments to other people's relationships, which is, like, I, like, forgot that, like, people who are chuds, like, don't think too well of, like, either promiscuous or, like, polyamorous characters at all. So, like, hey, thanks, Somber. Fuck you.
Also, how many, like, unasked for, like, kisses is that just today? Like, in
yeah,
this episode,
BJ smooched, like, priest. There's a lot of that going on, isn't it?
We're just, yeah. I mean, like, third time is a pattern. Like,
yeah.
Twice is coincidence, I guess. So, like, at this point, like, we're being completely unfair in, like, this extremely specific act, like, showing up twice.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, isn't it? But anyways, BJ lets her down gently, and also, like, is like, okay, you can't wear, like, because, like, the armor that she gets, like, Glory's like, I want to look tough, I want to look serious in the ways, and, like, the armor she has is, like, gets his, like, one part raider gear, one part fetish wear, basically, and the way it's described, and they're like, oh, Glory, oh, honey, you're not gonna look tough in this. You're right there, weird.
Well, no, she's finally adopting a disguise. Like, no, that's not Morning Glory. Whoever that is dressed like a skank.
I also forgot a chief point, too, is that it's also revealed that the reason why she went with Fallen Glory is also because she wanted to sound tough. Which admittedly is a little bit more endearing. Like, it's not just that it's a dumb name. It's like, it's a dumb name coming from someone who's like, I need to sound tough. I need to sound serious. Fallen Glory will be my name.
I mean, that was the first joke stream. Like, I am the knight. I am vengeance. The darkness of pony hearts. Darkness.
it's almost a good joke that this, like, goofy nerd is like, I'm gonna be a serious pony now, and it's like your best effort is like I'm gonna change my name to Fallen Glory.
I don't do Retheth anymore. I'm a grown up.
Yeah,
we're gonna go next year. We're gonna go middle school, so. I don't do Retheth anymore. They don't do Retheth in middle school, and so it's time to grow up.
Yeah. Glory is a very serious pony now. Anyways, we get one last moment before we move on to, like, an actually anything happening in this story. Where Glory and BJ go back to Charity to get, like, a new set of armor, which Charity, like, handily trades in, and then makes an incredibly telling line. Bija is like, what the fuck? You charged us triple the price for her supplies. It's like, yeah, you guys just wanted caps. She needed the deal, so that's why I did that. Proving once again that, like, the hilarious nonsense that is like, oh, I'm a benevolent capitalist because I could reduce my price at any time. I simply don't. But you should be grateful when I do. It's fucking amazing. It's so utterly telling.
I can relent in my extraction at any point. So wait a minute, who did she give a discount to and why? Because, like,
Glory,
last
because
time I remember
Glory to get her non-stripper wear for armor. Now she has, like, a cool aviator jacket that's armored and stuff.
Provisions to survive, like, the following day, like on Blackjack. That was not a worthy. That was something that, like, to rake them over the coals with.
Yep.
Oh, I guess it's just because she's a prude. Like, it personally affects this little monster to see another horse dressed with dignity. And so, like, that's an investment on the part of our little capitalist baby.
Yes. Capitalist babies, like, dreams come true. God, I hate Charity. Charity might be the worst character because she's meant to be, like, annoying but, like, precocious.
Waka waka.
Yeah, waka waka. I charge people premium prices for water. There is a moment later in the story that I'm gonna be excited for because she gets her kind of, like, hilarious just desserts, but even then it's still hollow because, like, it's still somber. Anyways, moving along. so we're now 30 minutes into this, 30 minutes plus give or take depending on this edits, into this, and the plot is finally occurring. But again, as we often do, I like to do this moment to perhaps get a snack go get a drink, take mids if you need to, run, jog, nap.
I think I might too need to, like, because like I'm so angry at this like fictional baby horse that like that it's made me into a worse person. Like I'm suddenly remembering like the like evangelical Christians in my life, and like the phrase beat the sin out of them. And normally that's a statement of pure evil, but like now I'm thinking about this hypothetical like fictional capitalist baby and going, might have a point there, might have a valid.
Gotta beat the capitalism out of you. Christ. Please don't actually beat children, by the way.
No.
This podcast does not advocate never child violence.
You just build resentment in them and they get worse.
Yes. It does not help at all, even a little bit. It's actively abusive. But anyways, yeah, so hug a cat and come right back. Welcome back, and we're finally actually moving the fucking plot along. So at some point, there's not really a strong explanation of this, but at some point, the caps have been paid off so that BJ can finally decrypt the file, and we find this out through a ghoul that can fly, like flies out of the sky with a little cart and is like, "Hi, I'm here to take you. I was sent by Bottle Cap." And she can't talk, like her tongue's been cut out, but she has it on a little sign. She's a character from the original story. She's a character from FOE. She's like, "Hi, I'm gonna take you to the pony that can decrypt this." But like, there are special rules. Like, you have to go. You're alone. You can't bring weapons. And also, to obfuscate the location of her hiding place, you have to like use a memory orb going to and away, which is yay, an excuse for more exposition orbs. Thanks for that, Somber. So everyone kind of has their little like goodbyes, their little worried, pensive goodbyes about the situation. Then we fly off into the sky. BJ is afraid of heights, and she then like takes a memory orb to
can take the edge off.
Well, she was told to.
I'm getting the memory shakes. I'm getting the.
I think after this point, she does not go a single chapter without a memory orb. So like.
Didn't need him. I need a fix.
I need my memory fix.
Hey, P21, is there any recollections that you're not super keen to hold on to? I got this empty orb, you see. I need
memories. the memory orb itself is from the perspective of Stonewing. His gruesome transformation of being turned into a weird Gorgon monster. Fluttershy is there for some reason. There's a mention of a weird rainbow magic gunk that is floated into his veins to make the process work. This is mostly just stuff for later points. It's pretty grisly, but like it doesn't matter. So, on to page 4 of my notes. And BJ wakes up in a StableTech office. Apparently this is where she's going to get the encryption. BJ tours the area for a while and kind of like looks at a bunch of like schematics and like I don't know what you'd call them, but like the finished dioramas of like buildings, I guess, like from an architect kind of museum of various stables and their conception. It mentions a bunch like space stables and moon stables and like sea stables and ones that fly in the sky and all sorts of shit. It's kind of neat, but like also like just filler basically. But anyways, BJ is directed to a little like information terminal where she has to enter like a little phrase, which reveals a hollow robot. Like it's basically a robotic horse that like a hologram is projected over of one of the founders of the like one of the former founders of StableTech, a character named Applebloom. She's like, "Oh, I'm the person who's going to decrypt you," and it's like. And BJ's like, "Who are you really?" It's like, "Well, I'll never tell. I could be a robot. I could be the CEO coming back from the dead. I could be an AI. Like, who matter? It doesn't matter. You're never going to find out." Turns out, huzzah, the pip buck can be repaired. It wasn't destroyed by the lightning. But BJ also gets a sweet upgrade to her pip buck. She now has a cool matte black pip buck that's stronger than ever, called the Pip Buck 3000 Delta.
Okay.
It's on.
It's just a OS swap over, like all of her current data.
Yeah, she just puts it in a thumb drive.
Okay.
Backs it up on a hard drive, even though it's like, I'm not getting the specifics of it, but that's not actually supposed to be possible.
My brain has skipped a beat. Like, oh yeah, no, I thought this was completely adhered to her, like, her foreleg. Like, is it the case that's being stripped? Like, I don't understand the process here.
I don't either. Like, the pit book can be removed. It's just that, like, I don't know what, like, it's supposed to be in lore that, like, pit books are very difficult to remove if not with the right tools, for whatever reason. So
my brain has skipped a beat. Who are these people and why are? Okay, so
there's an Apple robot that looks like a former CEO of the company talking to BJ, and apparently knows a lot about pit books and stable tech, like, stuff. So they're clearly related to stable tech in some way.
Okay.
And they're like, yay, I can repair your and upgrade your pit buck to a cooler, better pit buck, but it still keeps the file on it. So that's where we are right now.
I guess it just transmutes it. Like, it just, like, Pokemon evolves into a new model.
I suppose. I hope so. It's got even more, it's got bigger antlers.
With like shiny tips, like shiny, like very pointy tips. It's now a hazard to, like, have on it. Like, it's gonna be constantly, like, getting tangled things and
bugs. It's gonna get hooked on everything. But anyways, we actually get, like, kind of a cool moment in this where Applebot's like, oh hey, you know, so how is Stable 99 doing? I see that you're from Stable 99. Like, how's that place been working out there? They're like, I was wondering how the recycler is gonna work. We're gonna work out with that system because it was kind of a new process at the time. And BJ, like pretty like nonchalant. He's like, oh yeah, the recyclers are pretty good. They have trouble when you try to feed a body through them, but that's pretty. But otherwise, it's pretty fine. And also, it sucks when you have to, like, exterminate the males because of the, like, stable test. And Applebot kind of just, like, I guess robo stun silenced. And she's like, Stable 99 was a control vault, and a control vault in this context means a vault that doesn't have a, like, social engineering test in it of any kind. It's just, like, it's just literally just a stable designed to, like, make sure people live in it.
Save lives.
Yeah. And she's like, those, like, recyclers aren't supposed to have bodies fed into them. Like, you guys have an incinerator, you know that, right? That's usually how they dispose of the bodies in a stable. And also, like, here, I'm going to bring up the, like, recording that's given to the stable, like, runner, the overmare, when the stable's first opened. And, like, this just says it's a stable that, like, you're just supposed to live in. There was no, like, test being put in for this one. And I thought that was kind of a cool, like, reveal to have. That, like, oh, yeah, you just did this on your own. Like, no, you just...
I have mixed feelings about it, especially because of, like... And then the postmodern neo-Marxists took a hold.
I suppose you're right. It's kind of a neat one, though, because, like, the... I guess in context, one of the problems that I have with the FOE, like, fandom in general is that every single vault has some dumb social test in it, and very few of them have, like... very few of them are control. And I get why that is, because it's more interesting to have a dumb a social test that, like... makes your stable seem more crazy and weird. And it's kind of a cool reveal that, like, oh yeah, you guys just fucked up yourself. Like, no one told you to do this, you just did this. Is a neat idea. But you are also right that, like, it's also like, oh, people are just inherent monsters and are just going to turn into bad people no matter what. Is kind of also, like, a bad message to send as well.
Ah! Whoa! 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 Oh man, ah! Oh, we gotta move. The meta cops are here. Damn it! I knew they'd find us. Okay.
Sorry, folks. Technical difficulties caused by evil meta space ghosts. We gotta crinkle, rattle noises. A chain rattle.
Okay. We're in the sub basement. Okay.
Managed to wheel weird back in with a small power generator.
Damn meta feds.
So we just lost a whole bunch of audio.
Okay.
So we're gonna have to.
What was I even talking about? Like, I think I can faintly hear them up there, still scrounging around.
Luckily, they're real dumb. They probably won't find us in the sub-basement.
Yeah, I think we're good.
So I think I was talking about fucked up implications of. Like, it'd be all right if it was just, like, generically dystopic, but being very specifically the, like, MRA, like, fever dream is the outcome of this stable randomly going to pot.
Yeah.
Is really kind of suspicious and weird.
Yeah, I think that was our...
Okay, yeah. So what happens next? The pit buck poke evolves into its new
form.
Yeah,
into Pit Buck Delta. And then we get our actual explanation of what the Maltese EXE does and what it is. So, I'm going to have to explain a whole bunch of things that was lost to the Metacops last time.
They confiscated our time. like I only faintly remember what we just talked about something, or did we?
Maybe. Yeah. Who knows? Anyway. The Maltese EXE, which is the fun name we've given for the EC-1101, is a delayed trigger mega spell. It's designed specifically to transfer the chain of command in the event that the princesses and then later the ministries are exterminated. So it jumps from person to person, from the princesses to the ministry mayors, and in the event that they're dead, it'll jump to the generals and whoever. Also, in the case, it also jumped to the case of the children of the people who have ran the ministries, but those people aren't. I lost all my momentum from this. Shit.
Don't let the meta cops get you down. So anyway, I take it the important thing is that it was supposed to go down a chain of command, but the entire chain of command was eradicated. So it wound up stuck in the core computer servers of
this random stable.
Stable 99. Yes. And so what implications does that have for our merry crew? Now they have like this like massive government override that can get them access to any government.
Yeah, that's facility. The important part. What it actually does is that the skeleton key that can unlock basically any government like locked down technology, and this is important because a bunch of the like OIA, which I'm gonna have to explain the OIA in a second too, projects were all shut down by royal command, and this is the only thing that can unseal them. So the new quest is to figure out why someone wants this in the first place instead of just the one power of it and who does, and the only way that they can do this is by jumping backwards through the ping-ponging session that the Maltese has done back from Stable 99 and work their way backwards. So they have to go back to Stable 99. Yay!
Well, wait a minute. I don't know how that traces back to the people who are hunting it now. Like, it seems like anybody who is, like, familiar with its existence would want it.
Yeah.
Like anybody with any level of, like resources to tap into it would want it. Actually, any significant person, like cash money or Caprice or whatever, living around the, like, security, like, tormented, like, ruins of Goosestepsville would super want it. Like, everyone would want this thing. Like, how does, like, tracing back its, like, failure to, like, land anywhere useful, how would that, like, allow them to find out, like, who wants it when innately everyone would want it?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why it matters that they need to figure out who exactly is been hounding it. But here we are. But yeah, it's an excuse to go back to Stable 99. We're gonna meet back all our old friends, like the cops that murder wantonly, or the Overmare that is a monster, or the paranoid mechanic.
Also, why do they care? Like, I mean, they have. It's a ticket to, like, eternal wealth and security. Like, if they can activate this thing on any one of them.
There is three things I now have to explain. First of all, I'll do them in a dumb order. I have to explain the OIA. So the OIA is known as the Office of Inter-Ministry Affairs. It's the DEA, essentially. But not really. It was an organization that existed to, like, make sure that all the ministries ran smoothly and all interacted with each other. Goldenblood ran this. Of course he did. It's often referred to as...
Of course.
It's often referred to as Spike's ministry in the story for reasons. But it... Something happened, and all the projects that it was working on by itself were all flatlined because Goldenblood was taken into custody and all a bunch of shit happened. That's the reason why this is happening in the first place. Now, I now have to explain what mega spells are and subsequently what bypass spells are. So, I'm leaning back in my chair to do this. Mega spells were the big magic bullet technology in the setting that caused the war to happen, to end. Mega spells. A magical technology that was invented by the setting, which is essentially just taking any random spell, ramping up its potential effects up to its maximum possible by using a dumb ritual or magic fetishes or whatever. Mega spells come in a number of forms, at least specifically equestrian mega spells come in a number of forms and fill a number of facets, but zebra mega spells are primarily nuclear weapons because they just wanted to maximize the potential destruction that they could do with a mega spell. While Equestria wanted to do a whole bunch of dumb bullshit with their mega spells. The original mega spell that was invented was Cure. It mass healed everything, and it was deemed unusable because it could not target anything and would just bring back the enemy just as much as it would bring back your forces. It was originally invented by Fluttershy and her unit, her ministries. This is why she's a war criminal, because she then traded those secrets to the zebras, assuming that mutual assured destruction policy would prevent both sides from destroying each other, not realizing that in this setting zebras are bloodthirsty monsters incapable of feeling, because the story is racist as hell.
Zebra-lamacists. Yes.
We gotta stop zebra-isis. Zebra-isis. So, the thing is that Equestrian Mega Spells come in a bunch of different flavors. The ones that we ever get showed are the Celestia One, which is a death laser, the Heartstopper, which kills everyone, literally turns everyone's hearts off in a 5-mile radius, and in this story we get EC-1101. Because it's so powerful it can unlock literally anything. So now to explain bypass spells. So because the Equestrian government was paranoid. Most technology could only be accessed by people who had specific genetic codes. Like, everything had a genetic lock on it through magic. Most of the technology could only be accessed by one of the ministry mayors, which were given wholesale free clearance on basically everything, or the princesses themselves. But there's a specific quirk of using genetic stuff, is that as long as your genes are kind of close, it still works. So... this leads into a bunch of problems and a bunch of stories where characters are tangentially related to, like, by several removed generations, one of the ministry mayors, and allows them to access the technology. But mega spells are almost all invariably hard-coded that only a member of the direct ministries can be accessed, which means either their direct members or one of their direct family members can access the technology, meaning that the EC-1101 is borderline useless in the hands of almost everyone except for, like, maybe ghouls it might work as a proposition, but like direct related people would have to matter as well. So it's a bomb, but not everyone can use it. You need the specific genetic markers that allow them to use it.
Okay.
And that's why.
All right.
And that's why it's not the golden ticket everyone wants. God, I hope that one recorded because I can't do that a third time.
Yeah, it's
Gucci.
It's in there. I mean, again, we're safe here in the sub basement.
Yeah. I have a gun here, but it's out of meta bullets, so I don't think it'll work on them in the first place. Christ. But yeah, meta spells are incredibly dumb because a bunch of them are dumb plot MacGuffins.
All right, so we've got to go.
Yeah,
back.
We got to go back.
We gotta go back where it began. Yep. Under really dubious pretense, but sure. All right. Do we do that in this chapter?
Nope. Or the rest of the chapter is now filled with this. So, after that happens, I think an EMP goes off, like an EMP goes off, and all the technology shuts down in the room, and the room gets exploded by fighting time, because another one of the Zodiacs managed to track BJ down. This one's Aries, for those keeping count at home. More dumb fights happen. Ares gets blasted. A small child was also there. BJ refuses to fight him and kind of just like sends him on his way. And then she meets back up with Ditsy Doo, the ghoul pony that was transporting her. And she flies back, but not without taking another memory orb. Yay, memory orbs.
Man, I gotta chill out after that. Was an adrenaline like thing where I had to fight that random dude who broke into the secure facility. Full of technology that's actually way more valuable than my bounty could possibly be. I just gotta take another hit of exposition.
And this turns out to be the good stuff, because this exposition ball, it's a mass clump of... several chapters back, I talked about the idea that like a character couldn't deal with grieving the person she was in love with dying, so she wanted all of her memories extracted of him so that she could focus. This is the like hard bundle of all those memories being strapped together, BJ being dosed with that all at once. And it's just kind of a confusing mess of a bunch of memories that don't really matter. It humanizes a character that we're never going to see really again, but you know, whatever. I'm very flippant about this because like it's just fucking memory orbs suck and I hate them.
God, actually it just occurred to me, like, in the hands of a more creative writer, these memory orbs like have a lot of potential to be deeply terrifying.
Yes, I've talked about this before.
That like you could picture of Dorian Gray somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Like you could actually extract every like life experience someone had that contributed them to being like a remotely decent or moral person, and it would produce like a really heartwarming document of sort. Like it would like produce an incredibly like life affirming, like, and maybe even life altering like experience for anyone who had to experience the orb themselves. But the resultant person at the end of the extraction would be a monster.
Well, you could also do that in the reverse too. Like, it'd be fascinating to have a villain who's become a better person, and it's they think they're a good person now because all of their memories of being like a horrible cannibalistic raider monster has been like deliberately excised by their past self because they want to like, you know, drop flags and become a better person, and then they're like confronted by the fact that the new identity is like a sham created out of like conveniently excising all the bad parts of their personality. And you can have an interesting kind of dialogue of like, what do you do when you realize that you're a lie? But no one ever does that. No one ever does anything interesting.
I mean, and also it doesn't like affect motor skills. Like, I don't like it doesn't take like, yeah, I don't imagine it would like take skills out of a person. If you took somebody's memories of their time at a gun range, like their muscle memory at skill at firing a weapon wouldn't disappear. Like, you could just excise someone's entire like personality and rebuild them from scratch by giving them like almost entire like. Yeah, no, it solves the amnesia in real life problem of like, if you remove someone's entire like basis of memory, they don't talk no more.
Yeah.
And they can't control their bowels. But presumably, like, yeah, there's a lot of evil organizations like in this setting who would certainly benefit from like being able to like turn someone into a tabula rosa.
Yeah. Well, here we are, though. Missed opportunity.
Whoops! That's not the story we're reading today.
No, it's
not. Oh.
Oh, how I wish it was. Anyways, we're almost done. We've got a couple more big details to have for this chapter, so buckle up, folks. BJ and Rampage have a small chat after the facts. For some reason, Rampage is out of her armor for the first time in the story, and I don't remember why. Like, I don't think it's a particularly important detail, but it lets us to see what Rampage's cutie mark is, because we've all been wondering, I suppose. This is when we get to find out some dumb bullshit.
It's Deadpool winning.
Oh, you wish. You wish. It's instead, her cutie mark is actually six cutie marks that it oscillates between. Like, it's a teddy bear that gets a rips open into barbed wire that turns into a skull that transforms into an octopus, and it like oscillates like this every couple of minutes, I guess, or every moment. So she has the coolest cutie mark, where it changes from cutie mark to cutie mark. And she's like, yeah, mine's cooler than yours. And she's like, yeah, I guess it is. Yeah. And then we transition to, apparently they're the slaver pony, from the chapter ago that got stabbed by zombie swordsmen. They're giving a proper funeral to her. Cause the idea is like, well, she might've been a terrible slaver for a bunch of chunk of her life, but she meant well, and she was turning it around.
Look, all I'm saying is heritage, not
heritage. Christ. Her kid is now being added to the Crusaders, because the only condition of being a Crusader is you're an orphan, basically. But yeah.
Oh man, I want to join the Crusaders so bad, but if this is the price that has to be paid.
So, they're like, huh, well, Thorn.
Mom, Dad, good news and bad news.
What is it, Timmy? I've turned 11 today, and I've decided to be Batman.
Oh, okay.
Oh, you see, first I have to be traumatized and an orphan.
I think you see where this is going. But anyways, Rose's daughter Thorn, then goes missing after the funeral, and everyone's like, oh, I wonder what happened to her. She's probably grieving in her own way. BJ suspects something being up, though. So she manages to find Thorn in the arms of Rampage, who is you know, sort of like cooing softly about everything's going to be all right and it's not going to hurt anymore. And Thorn manages to squeak out like a child's, the way children only talk in stories, where she's like, oh, Rampage. And then Rampage snaps her in half by just crushing her with a bear hug. And BJ spies that her cutie mark has shifted into this scary pony skull while this happens. And that's our hard cut to the end of the chapter, is Rampage breaking a child in half.
Tell me about the rabbits, George.
You wish. You wish it was just a Lenny situation. So that's the end of our chapter. Do you got any closing notes you want to air out?
I'm bleeding from the edges. All the edges. I got cut by the edge.
It's real rough. It's Rampage is a difficult character, because I want to like her because she has a lot of interesting things going on with her, and her dialogue isn't terrible. But her backstory is so dumb and stupid. It's so inane and nonsensical and so 90s. Like, that's always what it comes back to me.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's ultra Liefeldian.
Yeah.
Alternatively, McFarlane.
Yeah.
Those idiots, like, were basically the same guy. Yeah.
The weak-willed, smooth-brained men who are like, oh, let's make our characters dark and edgy and, like, totally devoid of substance.
Well, I have two major, along those lines, I have two major recommendations for our listeners. One, look up Stan Lee and Rob Liefeld, and you should be directed to a short YouTube video featuring Stan Lee, Rob Liefeld, and Todd McFarlane, all having just a good time. It's a real good time. Stan Lee is, as much as like Disney marketing masturbates over his legacy, he was a bastard. Like, he was kind of a monster, but man, listening to him go to town on these two chuckle fucks is deeply cathartic. I recommend it for anybody. The other thing that I strongly recommend is giving us thumbs up, stars, likes, depending upon whatever service you're listening to this to. Press the good button.
Yes.
Press the button.
yes, write us a review so that you can improve us in the search optimization. Hopefully a positive one, but like if you have a negative one, that's also good too. Tell us if we're doing shit.
Yeah, no, actually, like one of those two things. Like the worst thing you can do is silence. The worst thing you can do to us.
You
is
can
nothing.
Find me at Thou Art Fi. It's an adult content. I'm an adult content artist outside of this, so don't worry about it. Just tweet me either the land friendship forgot or fanfic of the fanfic to send us questions. We'll get around to eventually answering them on the cast, and we'll check you out.
Until next time, he's Fi. I'm Weirding to Next Choir, and you know, in hindsight, I think this might all have been a terrible mistake.